obsessions. A man once possessed a donkey, which had served him faithfully for many years, but at last the poor beast grew old and feeble. As he was no longer of any use, his master made up his mind to shoot him. When the donkey learned the fate that was in store for him, he determined not to die, but to run away to the nearest town and to become a street musician. When he had trotted along for some distance, he came upon a greyhound lying in the road. "Well, brother," said the donkey, "what's the matter with you? You look rather tired." "So I am," replied the dog, "but because I am getting old and cannot go out hunting any longer, my master wanted to poison me, and I have taken my leave of him." "Well," said the donkey, "I am on my way to the nearest big town, where I mean to become a street musician. Why don't you take up music as a profession and come along with me? I'll play the flute, and you can play the kettle drum." The two set off together. When they had gone a short distance, they met a cat with a face as long as 3 rainy days. "What has happened to upset your happiness, friend Puss?" inquired the donkey. "It's impossible to look cheerful when one feels depressed," answered the cat. "I am well up in years now and have lost most of my teeth. Consequently, I prefer sitting in front of the fire to catching mice, and so my old mistress wanted to drown me. I have no wish to die yet, so I ran away from her." "Come to the nearest big town with us," said the donkey, "and try your fortune as a street musician. I know what sweet music you make at night, so you are sure to be a success." In a short time, they came to the courtyard of an inn, where they found a rooster crowing lustily. "What in the world is the matter with you?" asked the donkey. "I am only prophesying good weather," said the rooster, "for tomorrow is a feast day, and the landlady has given orders for my neck to be wrung tonight, so that I might be made into soup for tomorrow's dinner." "I'll tell you what, Redcap," said the donkey, "you had much better come with us to the nearest town. You have got a good voice, and could join a street band we are getting up." The rooster was much pleased with the idea, and the party proceeded on their way. But the nearest big city was a long way off, and it took them more than a day to reach it. In the evening, they came to a wood, and they made up their minds to go no further but to spend the night there. Before the rooster went to sleep, he looked around the 4 points of the compass and saw a little spark burning in the distance. He called out to his companions that he was sure there must be a house not far off, for he could see a light shining. They came to a brilliantly lighted house. The donkey, being the biggest of the party, went to the window and looked in. "Well, Greyhead, what do you see?" asked the rooster. "I see a well-covered table," replied the donkey, "with excellent food and drink, and several robbers are sitting round it." They consulted together what they were to do, and at last they arranged that the donkey should stand at the window with his 4 feet on the sill, that the greyhound should get on his back, the cat on the dog's shoulder, and the rooster on the cat's head. At the given signal, they all began their different forms of music. The donkey brayed, the greyhound barked, the cat mewed, and the rooster crowed. Then they all scrambled through the window into the room, breaking the glass into 1,000 pieces as they did so. The robbers were all startled by the dreadful noise, and thinking that some evil spirits, at the least, were entering the house, they rushed into the wood, their hair standing on end in terror. The 4 companions, delighted with the success of their trick, sat down at the table and ate and drank all the food and wine. When they had finished their meal, they put out the lights, and each animal chose a sleeping place. When the robbers saw that no light was burning in the house, and that all seemed quiet, the captain of the band said, "We were fools to let ourselves be so easily frightened away." stumbled over the greyhound, which bit him in the leg. Yelling with pain, he ran across the courtyard, only to receive a kick from the donkey's hind leg. In the meantime, the rooster had been roused, and he called out. The robber hastened back to his captain and said, "Sir, there is a dreadful witch in the house who spat at me and scratched my face with her long fingers. Before the door, there stands a man with a long knife who cut my leg severely. In the courtyard outside lies a black monster who fell upon me with a huge wooden club. And that is not all, for sitting on the roof is a judge who called out, 'Bring the rascal to me.'" After this, the robbers dared not venture into the house again. But the four street musicians were so delighted with their lodgings that they determined to take up their abode in the robber's house. And for all I know, they may be living here, they may be living there, to this day. Our next fairy tale is titled Snowdrop. Once upon a time, in the middle of winter, a queen sat at a window and thought to herself, "Oh, what I wouldn't give to have a child." And her wish was granted, for not long after, a little daughter was born to her, with skin white as snow, lips and cheeks as red as blood, and hair as black as ebony. They called her Snowdrop, and not long after her birth, the queen died. After a year, the king married again. His new wife was a beautiful woman, but proud and overbearing. She possessed a magic mirror, and when she used to stand in front of it, gazing at her own reflection, and asked, "Mirror, mirror, hanging there, who in all the land's most fair?" it always replied, "You are most fair, my lady queen, none fairer in the land." Snowdrop was growing prettier and prettier every day, and when she was 7 years old, she was as beautiful as she could be, and fairer even than the queen herself. One day, when the latter asked the mirror her usual question, it replied, "My lady queen, you are fair, it is true, but Snowdrop is far fairer than you." From this hour, she hated Snowdrop like a poison. At last, she could endure Snowdrop's presence no longer, and calling a huntsman to her, she said, "Take the child out into the wood. You must kill her and bring me back her lungs and liver so that I may know for certain she is dead." The huntsman led Snowdrop out by the wood, but as he was in the act of drawing his knife to slay her, she began to cry, and because she was so young and pretty, the huntsman had pity on her and said, "Well, run along, poor child." As he turned away, a young boar came running past, so he shot it and brought its lungs and liver to the queen as proof that Snowdrop was really dead, and the wicked woman had them stewed in salt and ate them up. The poor child ran as far as her legs would carry her, and as evening approached, she saw a little house, and she stepped inside to rest. In the middle of the room, there stood a little table, heard these words, she knew that Snowdrop was still alive. She pondered day and night how she might destroy her, and at last she hit upon a plan. She stained her face and dressed herself up as an old peddler wife, so that she was quite unrecognizable. In this guise, she came to the house of the Seven Dwarfs. She knocked at the door, calling out at the same time, "Laces of every shade and description." Snowdrop unbarred the door and bought the pretty lace. "Good gracious, child," said the old woman, "what a figure you've got. I'll lace you up properly for once." Snowdrop let her lace the bodice up, but the old woman laced so quickly and so tightly that it took Snowdrop's breath away and she fell down dead. In the evening, the Seven Dwarfs came home and saw their dear Snowdrop lying on the floor. They lifted her up tenderly, and when they saw how tightly laced she was, they cut the lace in two, and she gradually came back to life. As soon as the wicked queen got home, she went straight to her mirror and said, "Mirror, mirror, hanging there, who in all the land's most fair?" And the mirror answered as before, "My lady queen, you are fair, 'tis true, but Snowdrop is fairer far than you." "This time," she said to herself, "I will think of something that will make an end of her once and for all." And by witchcraft she made a poisonous comb, and then she dressed herself up and assumed the form of another old woman, and went over the seven hills till she reached the house of the Seven Dwarfs. Snowdrop looked out of the window and said, "You must go, for I may not let anyone in." "But surely you are not forbidden to look out," said the old woman, and she held up the poisonous comb for her to see. It pleased the girl so much that she opened up the door. When they had settled their bargain, the old woman said, "Now I'll comb your hair properly for you." But hardly had the comb touched her hair than the poison worked, and she fell down unconscious. It was now near evening, and the Seven Dwarfs returned home. When they saw Snowdrop lying dead on the ground, they searched till they found the poisonous comb, and the moment they pulled it out, Snowdrop came to herself again. As soon as the queen got home, she went straight to her mirror and asked, "Mirror, mirror, hanging there, who in all the land's most fair?" And it replied as before, "My lady queen, you are fair, 'tis true, but Snowdrop is fairer far than you." When she heard these words, she literally trembled and shook with rage. "Snowdrop shall die," she cried. "Yes, though it cost me my own life." The queen went to a little secret chamber, and there she made a poisonous apple. When the apple was finished, she stained her face and dressed herself up as a peasant, and so she went over the seven hills to the Seven Dwarfs. Snowdrop put her head out of the window and called out, "I may not let anyone in." "Are you afraid of being poisoned?" asked the old woman. "See, I will cut this apple in half. I'll eat the white cheek and you can eat the red." But the apple was so cunningly made that only the red cheek was poisonous. Stretching out her hand, Snowdrop took the poison. said, "I am so hungry and thirsty." But this clever son replied, "If I give you my cake and wine, I shall have none left for myself. Go your own way." Then he began to cut down a tree, but before long he made a false stroke with his axe and cut his own arm so badly that he was obliged to go home. Then the second son went to the forest, and his mother gave him a good cake with a bottle of wine. He too met the little gray man, who begged him for a morsel of cake and a draught of wine. But the second son spoke most sensibly too, and said, "Whatever I give to you, I deprive myself of. Go your own way." Not long after, his punishment overtook him, for no sooner had he struck a couple of blows on a tree with his axe than he cut his leg so badly that he had to be carried home. Dullhead begged so hard to be allowed to go that at last his father said, "Very well then, go." His mother only gave him a very plain cake made with water and baked in the cinders, and a bottle of sour beer. When he got to the forest, he too met the little gray old man, who said, "I am so hungry and thirsty." And Dullhead replied, "Let us sit down and eat." When they had finished, the little man said, "Now I will bring you luck, because you have a kind heart and are willing to share what you have with others. There stands an old tree. Cut it down, and among its roots you'll find something." Dullhead fell to at once to hew down the tree, and when it fell amongst its roots, he found a goose, whose feathers were all of pure gold. He lifted it out, carried it off, and took it with him to an inn where he meant to spend the night. The landlord of the inn had three daughters, and each longed to have one of its golden feathers. The first time Dullhead happened to leave the room, the eldest caught hold of the goose by the wing, but lo and behold, her fingers seemed to stick fast to the goose, and she could not take her hand away. Soon after, the second daughter came in, but hardly had she touched her sister than she stuck fast as well. At last, the third sister came, but no sooner than she had touched one of them than she stuck fast to her. Next morning, Dullhead tucked the goose under his arm and went off, without in the least troubling himself about the three girls who had run after him as best they could. In the middle of a field, they met a parson, who caught the youngest girl by the hand, but directly he touched her, he hung on himself. Not long after, a clerk came that way, and he ran after the parson, caught him by the sleeve, and hung on to it himself. Two peasants were coming from their work, and the parson begged them to rescue him, but they stuck on too, and so there were seven running after Dullhead and his goose. They came to a town where a king reigned whose daughter was so serious and solemn that no one could ever make her laugh, so the king had decreed that whoever should succeed in making her laugh should marry her. When Dullhead heard this, he marched before the princess and his goose and its appendages, with his goose and its appendages, and as soon as she saw these seven people continually running after each other, she burst out laughing, and Dullhead claimed her for his bride. The king, who did not much fancy him as a son-in-law, told him he must first find a man who could drink up a whole cellar full of wine. Dullhead went off to the forest, and there he saw a man sitting with a most dismal expression on his face. Dullhead asked him what he was taking so much to heart, and the man answered, "I don't know how I am ever to quench this terrible thirst." "I think I can help you," said Dullhead, so he took him to the king's cellar, and the man drank and drank till he drank up the whole contents of the cellar. Dullhead asked once more for his bride, but the king began to make fresh conditions. He required Dullhead to find a man who could eat a mountain of bread. Dullhead went straight off to the forest, and there sat a man making a most woeful face. Said he, "I've eaten a whole oven full of loaves, but what's the good of that to anyone who is as hungry as I am?" Dullhead was delighted and said, "Get up and come with me," and he brought him to the king's court. Now the king had given orders to have all the flour in the kingdom brought together to have a huge mountain baked of it, but the man from the wood just took up his stand